Live and Learn. Welcome to Season 2 of our weekly conversations about living, learning, teaching, and intercultural communication. We discuss cultural awareness and diversity, education and mentality, and we never really know where our talk will bring us in each episode. So, we just follow our curiosity and invite you to join us. We've got a special guest in our studio today. Remotely from Israel, here is Michael, my son, who agreed to share his experience of learning languages. We discuss what it means to be a good teacher and a good student, and argue about talent in acquiring languages. Please meet Michael Koblenz and get to know what it means to him to live and learn.
Do you think that all the things about how do we learn can be one of the most important thing about learning?
I know that I need to learn languages because it's my way to express myself.
You don't learn grammar, you don't learn structures, but at the same time you do learn structures from how people speak.
I don't think that there is such thing as a good student with a bad teacher.
Oh, you are so good at English. Do you know how many hours have I put into becoming good at English?
So, I understand that now I own this language.
I'm really curious about what you have to tell us about how you hacked and cracked all those languages that you speak.
Honestly, I'm curious too.
So we'll try to find out.
Yeah, the first question is something like, how do you call yourself? How do you present yourself? When somebody says, hi, hello, what's your name? Where are you from? What's your answer? What do you answer?
Well, it depends on the person who asks, because sometimes, like, if it's someone Israeli, so I tell my Hebrew name. If it's someone Italian, so I tell him my Italian name. If it's someone from Ukraine, I tell my Ukrainian name, and so on. So it depends.
Yeah, but what you say, where are you from?
Born in Ukraine, raised up in Calabria, live in Israel.
So all together, that's kind of a good summing up.
All of these countries are part of my identity, so all of these countries are important to me.
So, and what about languages? Which languages do you speak?
I speak Ukrainian, Russian, Belarus language, a little bit, and English, Italian, and Hebrew.
Actually, I remember the first time we went to Italy together with you, just with communication in the first month there, you were already speaking Italian. Do you remember this experience of yours?
I remember that it wasn't something strange to me because I just spoke with people. I started communicating with people, mostly English and some Italian. But I had to learn quickly Italian because no one there speaks English. So I had to rush to Italian, and it wasn't so difficult. I just got Italian language.
I also feel it was a gift, actually. Yeah, because it's not like putting effort into learning a language when you live in another country and you're learning a third country's language. Yeah, but when you are in the country and your aim isn't actually to learn the language, Mike, say if I'm mistaken, but I had a feeling you didn't have an aim to learn the language, but you wanted to communicate with people.
Yeah,
the language was the means.
One more thing, that when you dive into the environment and the environment welcomes you, I don't know, every time you just start saying something, start trying to speak out an Italian phrase or You were just reading menu in Italian, you're ready. Ma parla bello italiano, no?
Really, you're right that people welcome you and greet you and pay you compliments.
They do everything for you to communicate in Italian.
That's true. And the funny thing that you said the word gift, and the word gift comes from the word give, right? Given, but in the older English it was called gift, just like ed.
As if it was a regular verb.
Yeah, I think it still technically is a participle, right? Gift. So mm-hmm. that means that when somebody is giving you something, it's up to you to take or not. You can refuse.
And actually, I believe it comes from the same origin. So something that is given to a person, but somehow in the German language, gift is poison mm-hmm. and not a present.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. False friends when we translate from different languages, but in the same meaning, it comes from the word given.
Exactly. And you can take it, you can accept a gift as a present. And so, Mike, Italian was your, I was trying to count, but it's kind of impossible. So it was your, Italian is not a foreign language for you. It's a second language as we define it, a language that you...
A third?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to count and couldn't. So it's a second language technically because it's not a foreign mm-hmm. language, but yeah. a language that you acquired during your stay in a country. And I remember you had difficulties with understanding grammar notions while still speaking perfect Italian. How do you feel this difference, if any, between acquiring the language as a second language, as the language of communication, as different from a language in which you have to learn grammar first, structures first, and then try to speak?
I try not to study grammar first. In the first place, is that I need to know how to speak this language, not to know how the language is built, but how to speak it. Because when I go to a restaurant, I need to know how to ask for something in the in a restaurant, but not to know that this word is grammatically called, I don't know, present perfect of the continuous, I don't know.
Of the continuous, of the passive, of the conjunctive, of the whatever. And I believe even now, you being fluent in many languages, you still have a very vague idea of what grammar structures are. Yeah. And then how do you technically learn a language? Have you ever thought about it? How do you get to know a language without those grammar structures?
Firstly, I just learned some words that I need to know to just start a conversation. And then when I start talking to people using those, I don't know, 10 words. And then if it's like in Italy or in Israel, when where the people are open to speak to you. So when you are out of those words, you just ask people, what do I have to say now? And after that, you just start listening to other people, acquiring other words from other people, and start using those words that you previously didn't know in your everyday life. And then when you listen to people, how they speak, you understand how do they put words in the sentence, how do they actually speak. So I don't need to learn grammar for this, to know that this part of the language goes after another one. But I just know that I need to say like that. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you ask a native speaker, why is that? And they answer, because we say it like that.
Yeah.
Because you have to use it like that. So this is more or less how you learn languages. You yeah. don't learn grammar, you don't learn structures, but at the same time, you do learn structures from how people speak.
I do not learn the structure, I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I just analyze it without some special tech words for all this grammar stuff. I just understand it. I think about it, or even don't think, but just understand somehow, and then use it.
So basically what happens is that you are building up from the examples you hear. You put it through your language acquisition device. You analyze and process what you've heard. You're asking yourself or other people, why do you say it this way? What should I say this way? What I should answer here? And then you create your own understanding of this language. Am I right?
I don't always ask people about it. I just listen to more and more people, communicate with more and more people. And in this way, I just analyze all this information that I've heard, and that's it, without even asking other people what do they think about it.
So basically what happens, if you remember Sherlock Holmes, right? He was a master of deduction, right? So he was taking the cases, he was taking the alibis, the, I don't know, some kind of the objects he finds, or whatever people say, puts it through his thinking process and creates his own understanding of what happened. Right? So, and you are doing the very same thing. So you're doing the deduction from the units of what you hear, and you're creating your own understanding of this particular language. Rather than we just go to grammar level 3 and see, so what is the gerund? I know the person who has MA in English language from Cambridge and who doesn't know what gerund is. What did you say again it is called?
Mm-hmm. When Michael was, I think, 12 years old, 11 years old, I'm not sure now, he already spoke Italian, having acquired it from Italians in Italy. And we were back in Ukraine and I was teaching B1 level while he was passing from one part of our apartment through the study where I was holding lessons. On his way, he heard that I was explaining imperfetto as a grammar notion to my students. And he just stopped for a moment and asked, chiedo scusa, ma l'imperfetto che cos'è? And I said, it's one of the past tenses in Italian that you use to say about something that was repeatedly or continuously in action in the past. Are you okay with this? Mike just said, ah, sì? Non lo sapevo. The paradox is, non lo sapevo contains this imperfetto verb in an absolutely correct form. He just didn't know what this grammar term was. What is that? One of the past tenses. Ah, really? I didn't know that. Using exactly this form correctly and not actually worrying about, well, how to say things, but just curious about what that new notion was. This somehow to me is a very good illustration of how it works for people who just acquire a language from how people use it and not starting with grammar.
That's exactly how we're all fascinated with the language, because it is, on one hand, is very difficult to learn because it is like endless. You don't know where it ends. So, Michael, I have a question to you. How do you understand that you have learned a language?
I just can freely communicate with people who speak this language from their childhood. So when I understand that, I can communicate with them without thinking what to answer or what to ask. So I understand that now I own this language. It's not based on some language levels like A1, A2, B1, B2, but for me, as far as I understand, for me, I know the language. I can say it when I'm like B1, B2, something like that. Because A1, A2, you just know some base, but for me, it's not enough to have a good communication with someone.
So what do you need to say to yourself that you're okay, that you own the language? So A1, A2 are not enough as levels because they don't allow you to say what you want probably. But what do you need to be able to do with the help of the language?
To express my thoughts about a lot of subjects. To express my thoughts and to express my feelings and to understand other people's thoughts and feelings. So if I can do this, so I know the language. If I cannot do it, but I know just some words, that means for me that means that I just know a couple of words.
When did this feeling come to you with Hebrew?
I don't know, maybe a month and a half, two months that I've been here. Not exactly that I already knew Hebrew that in that level that I wanted to know, in that level that I wanted to, it was after about 3 months. I'm here now for almost 2 years. No, it took me a little bit more time because I live in the same place with people who speak Russian and Ukrainian. The first time I got here, it was a period of Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot. We didn't go to school. We didn't see Israeli children. So we just were here and spoke with each other in Russian and Ukrainian because we don't know other languages.
So you weren't exposed in the first period that you were in the country. Yeah. You were not exposed to the language so much as you wanted to.
Yeah.
It would have taken you less if you had been exposed to the language then. Still, when you say a couple of months, to many people it sounds amazing. Like, how is it possible? And so my question here would be, do you believe some people are more talented when languages are concerned or not? Having your experience and seeing other people, what would your comment here be?
I think that obviously there are people that are more intelligent and people that are less intelligent. It's obvious, but...
But is it talent or intelligence? I hear very often, oh, okay, there are people who are more talented than others.
I think that it's based more on how do you see yourself? Because, for example, I see myself as a person who has who's got no problems with logic, so I can logically understand languages without studying grammar or something like that, just analyzing. But even if I know that I've got no problems with logic, I've got very strong issues with the maths and physics and all stuff like that. But with languages, I know that I need to learn languages because it's my way to express myself.
So it's something about motivation, we could say. Yeah. If
I don't know how it's for other people. For me, it's 100% motivational thing. Because there was a period when I started to learn maths with a good teacher, and I had some success because I was motivated and because my teacher was a good teacher. So it depends very much on those 2 points.
Okay, so what then a good teacher to you?
For example, school teachers are not a good example for me because in school program, it's a program which is based on I don't know what. Just there is a medium student that actually does not exist in real life, and the program is done for this perfect medium student that learns in this way that they told obviously wants to learn only the things that the Ministry of Education wants him to know. When it comes to a school teacher has to stay in that program. So there isn't a kind of possibility to teach anyone in their manner, because sometimes there are students that can learn in this way, but cannot in another. For example, I cannot listen to podcasts because I just get distracted in like about 10 seconds. I just put earphones, one moment, oh, such a beautiful bird.
Well, I can listen to podcasts and I can learn languages by listening. Other people can learn grammar and they can learn a language by learning grammar first. Other people cannot do that, like you. You cannot listen to podcasts. You cannot learn grammar. You don't see the point probably in doing that if you can acquire a language in a different way. At the same time, if I get you right, school teacher is not or cannot be a good example to you to assess what a good teacher is because they are conditioned by a school curriculum and cannot teach being student-centered.
To each one in a proper way.
Yeah, if we don't talk about school teachers, like from your broader experience, maybe what is a good teacher or what makes one a good teacher?
Understanding a student. When a teacher does not think about we need to do this unit in 15 days precisely, but we need to do this unit in the time that a student can learn this unit. If a teacher can see that they need to like slow down a little bit, or that the student acquires the information really good, and there's no point in studying one unit for a long time when if a student already understood it, so they just come to a next step, go over. And the other thing is that teacher needs to know himself or herself the subject.
Can I summarize right now? So according to you, as far as I understood, being a good teacher, or what a good teacher is the person who is not conditioned by the curriculum within the specific time, who can understand the student's capability to learn, how quickly this person can learn, and can adapt what needs to be taught to how quickly it goes on. And to be a good professional and to listen. You said one very important thing, to listen and to reassess every time how quickly and how deeply you're supposed to go. And I have the next question. What is a good student? What does it mean to be a good student? How can you see that other people are not doing well enough, or you are not doing well enough in some subjects? So how can you see that you are making it happen?
I cannot say that I'm a good student because I really distract very much. In a lesson, I can just, like I said, with a podcast, I just can look through a window and just, it seems to me that 5 seconds have passed, but the lesson is almost out.
5 seconds, the lesson is over. Oh, it was such a short lesson.
Actually, when I study here, there are some subjects when I just prefer to do this thing, just not to listen to some teachers. I don't think that there is such thing as a good student with a bad teacher. You can see a good student only with a good teacher, because even a good student with a bad teacher cannot study well.
Are there any prerequisites for a student to be a good one?
I think generally it's only intelligence that really you need to have to study, because if you cannot think, analyze what you are going through in your studies, you cannot understand what you are studying. But another thing is, how do you study? In what terms do you study? Because if it's like school studying, you know, you really have to be more concentrated. If it's personal meetings with a teacher or in small groups with the only people that are really interested in it, like what we are doing now in Latin lessons, only people that are interested in it study there. It means that you just need to be interested in a subject to be a good student. If you are not, so you cannot study.
It's really interesting how people try to analyze and come up with what works for, like, in general. One more thing is that why we're having Michael here to share his experience, to share what works for him, and how important it is to understand what makes you successful student and what makes you keep your motivation, and in your case, what you're saying, to be focused or to at least know about yourself that you get distracted quickly. Therefore, you can at least be aware of it and focus when you really need to. For example, when you are paying for a class and you know that this is a teacher's time and you need to be focused here and now. Do you think that all the things about how do we learn can be one of the most important things about learning? Because what Ina said previously, that we have very different abilities and we have very different skills. And sometimes our physical, emotional, health things can impede us in doing something that, as Michael said, average person is supposed to do. So what you're saying it has nothing to do with the subject, has nothing to do with what is happening in the class, rather like knowing where you're strong, how to deal with something that impedes learning. Am I right here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Michael, what do you study now? What's your subjects? How did you choose them? Why you are studying them? Why you study there?
I study here because like my point was to move to this country, to Israel, to get here to the army. And this studying program was for me the way to get to my aim. And the subjects are Hebrew grammar, some literature in Hebrew, like obviously maths, English.
History.
History, yeah. Biology is what I chose to learn for like advanced program. Here in my school, there are possibilities of learning one out of three megamod chosen subjects, biology, physics, and Hakloot, agriculture. And I've chosen biology because it's a thing that I'm interested in.
How does it build up everything that you are interested in? So where does this bridge?
For me, for my interest, not for my future profession. What I want to do is to be an officer in the Israeli army. I've searched it and I found a very cool job in the Israeli army, and that is in the diplomatic part of the army.
If it's a state secret, don't tell us.
It's not. It's a coordinator for the foreign forces.
You have some ideas about what you want to do later in life, after school, when you join the army. And have you got an idea of how what you have been studying by now and what you're studying now, how this has something to do with your job of choice?
general intelligence that that helps you to make your life more interesting. It has nothing to do for me, like studying biology has nothing to do with the diplomatic work in the army, but it's the thing that I'm interested in too. I cannot close myself in one or two things that I'm interested in and just learn it and don't even want to study something else. I want to study different things that can be even not connected or not to be connected directly, if that is that I'm interested in. So
so you go for it.
So I, yeah, so I'll go for it.
What you call intelligence, I think, is something that I usually call curiosity. Does it make sense?
I think that if you are not curious, you cannot be intelligent.
And intelligence, interlegere, is the ability to read what's between the lines, between the people. Not the object A and B, but how it relates one to another.
I think that there is a point in what you said, because I think that that is how it works. If like, you know, you just can read, you can not have intelligence, but you can read as many books as you want, but you don't take a lesson of none of it. You just read and that's it. But if you can analyze and really read between the lines, that can make sense.
It's interesting how you said intelligence, what Michael understands, and Ina says that it's what she normally calls it, curiosity, because I normally put it into skills perspective. How much effort have you put already? Mm-hmm. And this is a question which, as you said, annoys me sometimes, because, oh, you are so good at English. Do you know how many hours have I put into becoming good at English? Oh, you're just good at wines. Not only drunk, but also learn about it. Went to how many presentations, how many wineries we have visited, how many books or programs or lectures or guided tours have I visited. So the same idea, when we assess what somebody is good at, we normally see it at this moment. But in the economics, there is a term, sunk costs, something that you have already spent. And this is something that I think we should be talking about more, like how much have I already put effort? How many books have I already read? And this is what I think Michael said about intelligence, like, if you are quick thinking, it's not because of the pace, it's just because you have already done a lot. You have already learned a number of languages that maybe other people have never even tried. So that's already how many hours of learning, practicing, understanding, analyzing, reading, speaking, you have already experienced.
For me, it's impossible to count because, for example, with Italian, how many hours did I spend to learn Italian? I don't know.
The effort of learning. What Michael said, going through analytics, going through logics, how it works. Why is this built this way? Because maybe that, and that. So you're trying to apply scientific method of analyzing the units that you put into your head. So that's what we started with, right? So to use the analytics, because you have already the experience, for example, with French or with English or with Russian or with Ukrainian, because you know the way structures work. Mm-hmm. And therefore, in my understanding, what I was trying to bring through is when we're assessing how good somebody in something, so for example, I didn't know, IOTS, exam reveals how good are you in reading, writing, speaking, and listening, right? But it never exposes how much effort was put in it, how many hours, how much communication, how much reading, analyzing, and so on has already been put to get to this level. And maybe 30 people who are sitting in the same class chose not to put effort or to put more effort into learning something, to get more curious, but also productive about it. So that is what I'm trying to see, because the sunk costs, they all come from the choices. Do you want to go to drink beer with your friends and to, I don't know, play computer games or just like spend time? Or do you choose to read a book on something that interests you? Or I don't know, you want to communicate with a person in this language? Or they all of these efforts that I was trying to describe, they all come from our everyday choices. And sometimes they are neglected when person says, okay, you're just so good at language.
You're just talented.
The thing that actually keeps me thinking from what Michael has just said is to own a language. So what I own, so how many languages do I own? I think this is a perfect way to translate the academic phrase, like to acquire a language, into its less academic synonym to the word own. And in my understanding, the shift would be just tremendous. If we try to get the sense to the students that you're not learning the language, you're making it your own. And depending on how quickly do you want it to make your own, how much effort do you put to making it your own, how much do you practice, do you try to find each situation to be a learning experience, and then to think, yeah, so do I learn this language or am I making it my own? How many languages do you own, Ina?
None. I can explain why I think so, because while you were talking, I thought about this term native language. That is not correct, in my opinion, because native means you were born with it. None of us is born with a language. We learn a language, acquire it, whatever, to make it our own. And this is exactly what you were saying. So none of the languages is our native language, if we look at it from this perspective. All of the languages, including our first one, becomes our own after we put effort into learning. Every other language that we come into contact with during our lives also has a chance to become our own if we put effort into it. So then I would put it like, I don't own any language, meaning that I can definitely say I've mastered a language, because it's always a process. All the time the new words are appearing and I'm putting an effort constantly into making this language context, cultural context, etc., my own. So I'm constantly in the process of acquiring ownership. But then I can say that, as Mike said, it's important to express yourself in a language, and then you can say, or he can say, that he owns a language. From this point of view, I can express myself in English, hopefully in Italian, a bit in German. I'm getting closer to this possibility to express what I think. And I start being able to do so when I talk about the topics that I am knowledgeable at. Russian, Ukrainian, despite the lack of practice, when I get into the environment, I can express myself quite fluently in Ukrainian as well. I would say that's it by now. What about you? Which languages do you feel you are comfortable with expressing yourself?
It's interesting that it doesn't depend on the level. I feel that, yeah, Russian being my native language, but as well, I started I started being exposed very early to Ukrainian, and I think my generation, my year of school, was the very first generation that actually had an opportunity to learn Ukrainian from the first class after, I don't know, 30, 40 years when it was banned. And in this case, and my grandparents were speaking half Russian, half Ukrainian, so it was always a mixture, and for me it was not quite clear which is which. So for me it was all grandma's and granddad's language. And then in school, of course, I understand that it evolves, and the literature and history, and then chemistry, physics, we all had in Ukrainian, so no worries about that. And I feel that the patriotic feeling that I have is much stronger with the Ukrainian one, even though that the Russian is like more native to me because my parents speak Russian. We do not speak Ukrainian with my parents, but this is a very difficult thing to measure. So it's not a level. The same story with English for me. It's a working language, the language for professional career and professional studies of whatever topic comes to mind. So the language I lecture. And then I have two other languages which are very dear to my heart, which I really love. That is French and Italian and a little bit of Spanish, because I feel very, very comfortable in Spanish-speaking environment. I understand very quickly what they're speaking. I may not be fluent when I answer it, but I feel very comfortable. And the funny thing that my Italian is much less than German, but I feel much more comfortable in Italian-speaking environment than in German-speaking environment. And as for the certificate, my certificate for German is much, much higher. Right, I have B2 certificate in German, and A2 or B1 in Italian, I don't even remember. But the ease at which I feel I can express is incomparable. And by the way, if we're talking about languages, Latin is the one that united, but we're not speaking Latin, right? And Python would be a good example here, because we're not speaking Python, but getting intermediate, almost upper intermediate level in Python for NLP got me a very good understanding how you can acquire and make the language your own to fulfill the specific tasks and to achieve the tasks.
Mike also mentioned that the only language that he was learning as a foreign language is actually English. And this is the language that he did not acquire in the environment. And he was learning it having started as a kid in a small group with his dear teacher, Irina. We will link her in show notes, so go there, check out, and enjoy. Learning English has become the first experience, actually, of learning another language that Mike was not exposed to in the environment, and still was quite successful in making the language his own, so that he can participate in discussions, follow webinars if he's interested, reading, watching movies, participating in any interesting activities in English. Special thanks to Irina.
Including the podcast, being a podcast guest. So thank you very much to all our teachers, to my teachers, to Maria Mihalna, who made a very big impact on me learning English.
The teacher that I really want to thank was my teacher at high school, Lyubov Kasheva. who was also Irina's teacher at school. And so we are the second generation teachers who were excited by her teaching. She was the one who would spend nights preparing games, activities, all sorts of exciting stuff for us to fall in love with the language, with everything you can do with the help of the English language.
Beautiful. So with a big thank you to all the teachers who are doing their job every day, every night, we encourage you to live and learn.
Learn and live.